to SportsGrumblings.com's podcast, Points on the Board. I am here with Big John. My name is William Del Pilar, the conservative Latino with Big Girthy John, and we got some good topics tonight. We're going to close out the owners' meetings. There's still a lot of good info there, and two Bruces in America have retired that are well-known. We also have another minority hire in the NFL. And this one has nothing to do with skin, but quality of coaching.
Mm-hmm.
Some Dickie V kicking the tish out of something.
Yep.
And unbelievable, Big John.
What's that?
Antonio Brown is in the news again.
Wow. Imagine that.
So how are you doing, Big John, before we get going?
I am doing fine. I'm ready to go. I know I may seem a bit lethargic, but I'm not. My mind is sharp. If the mind is willing, the mouth is going, even if the body is kind of being a lump of clay right now. So,
well, that always happens when you get big and girthy and old.
And old. That's the key. Old. But
exactly.
I've been carrying around this weight for a long time. I'm used to it. But the old part is what I'm still getting used to. But
well, for the audience that doesn't know, Big John was in a major accident some years back. So how's the health hanging with the bones? The healing still there? Is arthritis headed in?
You know,
how's it
going? It was funny because my mother called me last night and she said, how long's it been? 5 years since you had that car accident? I was like, no, it's 8, actually.
Wow.
It's funny, but it's coming up. April 14th would be my 8-year anniversary of almost being killed in a very serious car crash. And believe it or not, I still feel it, man. My legs are still all blood clot. You can see them. They look like someone took a baseball bat to my legs, even to this
wow.
day, 8 years later.
Wow.
So, yeah, but I try not to use that as an excuse. Yeah, I'm achy, I'm cranky, but I just figure that's because of my personality. Eventually, it would have come to this anyway.
No, Big John's a nice guy, America. He's a hugely nice guy. That's why I actually approached to work with him. Anyway, let's get to it here, big man.
Sure.
Let's wrap up the NFL owners meetings. There's three topics I want to talk about.
Sure.
And we'll get into the first one right away. The NFL is denying interviews for secondary executives until after the NFL draft.
Mm.
I kind of like it. What are your – and I'll explain my thoughts here. But what are yours first? You like it or not?
I hate it. I hate anything that restricts people's choices. So I don't view it from the team's perspective. I view it from the coaches, the personnel's the employees' perspective. This isn't a plea for socialism. I'm certainly no Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren. I'm not talking about that.
You're talking about your freedom of a libertarian and our
own
choice.
Look, I firmly believe that if teams want to restrict their employees' movement, they should have that written into the contract. That way, at least every employee knows, okay, if I get hired by Buffalo or Philadelphia or Tampa Bay, which were, I think, three of the teams that said, they proposed restricting this, I would say, okay, put it in their contract. If if you leave prior to the NFL draft, you have a non-compete clause until after the NFL draft. That's not uncommon. It's a typical business practice. It happens in any industry. If you don't want to be restricted, don't work for those teams. But
right.
to have a blanket policy like that, no, sorry, there's no indentured servitude in my world.
I completely disagree. And here's why. Well, for the record, we always had a 2 weeks notice and I built into the contracts for our freelance writers.
Right.
I never actually held anybody back from a job because they were under contract for the year.
Right.
The contract more was a guarantee where they wouldn't just leave without some kind of notice, because I could be an ass. I would take him to court, even though we couldn't afford it, just so they would have to get a lawyer and go through the misery of all that.
Right.
You know, that's neither here nor there. But people think I'm mean, but it's business. I was protecting my
business. But let me ask you this, William. You told your people if you leave, you got to give me 2 weeks' notice.
Right, but in reality, you always have that jerk. And this was the freelancers, our writers.
Right.
Our management were under different California law-based type
right,
of
right.
employer. But I never had an issue because I knew our better writers would get poached.
Sure.
Because we weren't paying much because we had so many volunteers, you know? Right. And so I the only thing I ever kept them to was like, I said, can you give me 2 weeks? I said, you can write for them, but I still need those 2 weeks. I was like, I have to find somebody to slide them in. Right. Not one, because it was in 10 years, there was never not an issue. Now, the reason I understand this rule and I disagree with you is it has to be league-wide. You know, you have to shut that down to make it uniform. I get that. I'm not saying I agree with it, but I understand the logic. But these are jobs that people can't turn down. If the teams know, they can't keep those employees from turning them down. So they're not saying we don't want you to have that job. What they're saying is we need you through the NFL draft. This rule is being put in place so teams don't poach somebody right before the draft.
I understand why teams would want that. And what I'm saying is write it into the contract. Right.
No, that is, John, as a business owner, we should know that it's a 99% chance that's in the contract, but they needed to get it passed as a league.
Why?
To have uniformity, you know, those leagues, whether we like it or not, they're built on uniformity because of the law. John, we've had this conversation. I could not give employee A, who was 10 times better than employee B, a bigger bonus because of activist, stupid, ignorant judges would sit there and look at employee B as the equal of employee A, you know? So it was easier for me not to get into that potential legal battle. Here, y'all get the same gift, you know? That's probably one big reason, even though they're exempt from certain laws, it's just common sense. You make this rule, it erases any issues. Plus, most owners would want, they are the team owners. So they're doing is taking it one step further. And the players union has not come out against this. Well, I'm sorry. I apologize. There is no coaches union. There is no coaches union.
Right.
So that's one reason they can get away with this without some kind of negotiation. But I think it's a fair deal because, look, there's no doubt Jerry Jones would try to post a Carmen, the former owners of the York family, the Bartolomeo.
No,
Bartolomeo's
the money honey on CNBC. Yeah.
He would do something like Bartolomeo. So my point is, this keeps everybody honest. The person still gets the gig. And if he doesn't get the gig, if I'm the guy who lost out on the gig, I'd have to be asking the team, did you want me just because you knew the Eagles wanted that top coach? You know, so there's various, as you like to use, various layers. Overall, I think
there's
it's a good
lot of layers to it, but I think we just fundamentally disagree. I am always going to be on the side of more freedom, more choice for individuals, and less to corporations, governments, and anything that's collectivist. So to me,
no, I agree. But John, the one thing the NFL has done, and it's probably because of the I don't know who they negotiated with, but I'm sure there may not be a formal union for coaches, but some coaches probably had a say in this, that they cannot turn somebody down from taking a job that is a promotion. So if they go from assistant from defensive coordinator to you know, assistant head coach or whatever.
I disagree with that too.
No, but my point is they've made it work. See, this is what you need to realize. Leagues are different because free agency alone should be against every libertarian belief you've been brought up with. Because not free agency, but the draft. Because they don't get a choice team they go to, do they?
The draft is against, if you look at the draft by itself, I agree with you. Like, honestly, the way you look at it, people. I've always said the draft is like legalized slave auctions right now.
Exactly.
I don't understand how this, like,
you know why it's done. Don't say you don't understand.
I understand why it's done. What I'm saying is, in an era where everything gets a metaphor to, like, oppression of people of color, anything. Like the Will Smith incident with Chris Rock, somehow, I read an article in Salon, somehow a black man slapping another black man is somehow related to white nationalism. I don't understand how that connection was made, but somehow it was made, right? So I'm saying in this age where two black guys can get into a bitch slap fest, that's somehow white nationalism, but these young black and mostly black athletes literally being paraded in front of mostly white guys saying, how much can you jump?
I got to cut you off. I got a story to tell you. Okay. I'll make it quick. I'm watching the clock here. So I'm at the Senior Bowl. It's drafting. I got involved in I was always a political junkie, heavy political junkie at the 2000 election with Chad, that. And then that's when I saw the media begin to shift. That's when I saw the polarization being pushed heavily on identity politics. So I'm at the Senior Bowl in Alabama. I can't remember the place, but it was one of those historical places. You know what it was historical for? That's where they sold slaves.
Unbelievable.
So I'm in the back, I wasn't there for that portion. I was there to talk to coaches and so I was just more of a fan. And first of all, dude, I'm not gay, but these are some damn impressive human specimens.
Oh, yeah.
In terms of they come as close to the look of a Greek god as you'll ever see.
Agreed.
Okay, so that out of the way, I'm looking at him, John. So you can't see my arms, but they're spread out like this or that. Some of them are up there in black boxers. Some of them are up there in whitey tighties. And I'm thinking, I'm like, oh, my God, this is how it was 100 years ago. Except they went up there and I'm looking around because in my mind I'm freaking out, not in a bad way, just like, doesn't anybody else see this? Am I the only one that sees this?
I'm sure they do. But you know what's
the difference? Here's the difference. They were being sold into slavery.
Right.
These people were being hired to become one percenters in the country. And those owners have every right to know what they're getting because it's their bodies they put on the field. Well, that said,
and it's also voluntary.
The irony is just
I get it. And it's also voluntary. I get it. Like nobody wants to be there, right? I get that part of it. But the actual process itself, it's stunning to me. Now, you know what the conundrum is, right? It's exactly what you said. The conundrum is, even with all the, like, literally you can't escape it. If you watch the NFL Combine and the draft, not the draft itself, but the Combine. If you watch the Combine at the NFL Network or something, the fact that slave auction does not enter your mind to me is inescapable. It has to enter your mind, right? So if you're on a social warrior – you know what the only thing preventing you from saying something like that is that this, quote, modern-day slave auction is actually making the, quote, slaves super wealthy.
Well, I wouldn't use wealthy, but super rich. To me, there's a difference.
Super rich. You're right to, again, use that Chris Rock thing. Yes. They're going to be set for life, like you said, right? They're going to become rich. So that is, to me, the conflict that's going on. Like, it's the same conflict that's going on with Bill Cosby. Like, the guy raped all these women.
Don't say that about Mr. Yellow.
Right? Mr. Cosby. He raped all these women. But to so much of the black community, Bill Cosby, otherwise, was always viewed as an icon, as a hero, right?
But let me stop you there just for this. It wasn't just the black community. It became, because of identity politics, that kind of became a focal point. But Bill Cosby transcended the black community. Dude, I mean, I grew up on this.
We all did.
And then the popsicles, the Jell-O, the Cosby Show I loved. You know, he became an institution.
How devastated were you when those allegations surfaced?
I can't remember the years, but I do remember. I was like, damn, OJ, now Cosby? Because, I mean, to me, OJ Simpson was not the Buffalo Bills. To me, he was the player. But to me, OJ Simpson was the guy in those cool commercials, Hertz commercials,
He was in the movies?
Yeah, he was the juice, but he transcended being the juice. Right. He was not only the American success story. And both of these guys, what do they both have in common? They both come across as like the nicest guys around.
Right, you're right, and that's why it's so devastating.
I was devastated. So I sat at my desk at the VA center because I was transitioning out, so I had a 6-month gig there, and I just sat there thinking, I was going through my head everything because they hadn't actually come out and said it's OJ. But it's like all that, it's like nobody was saying it's OJ, but everybody at that point knew it's OJ. So I'm thinking in my mind, I'm like a mini detective, you know, finding ways where it wasn't OJ and failing every time. And it was completely devastating to me because it's true. You don't want to know how the hot dog or sausage is made, and you don't want to meet your heroes. But Big John, we really got it off track.
That's okay, but that was a great little segment there, but I agree with you. So I agree, but the more –
we're going to disagree on this.
We're going to disagree on this.
They should have their freedom.
Yeah, the more freedom for the individual, the better.
Yeah, I don't think so, only because the leagues are unique. But that said, every year a little voice keeps saying – louder and louder, take their antitrust exemption away. Yeah. Okay, real quick here, Big John, because we've already talked about Mr. Jimmy Garoppolo.
Yes.
He had, he's 30 years old, had shoulder surgery, waited until after the season. Thus, no team had any interest because you have to wait out, see how he comes out of this injury. Well, there's no longer a QB market. And over the owners' meetings, his name came up a couple times, just topic of interest. What right now, the 49ers are just giving public lip service right now because I see a couple of bad issues with keeping Garoppolo on that team. What are your thoughts? Is there one? Is there a market? And two, what is their best move with him?
It's so tough because, look, Jimmy G was a warrior last year. He knew he was – I mean, he was hurt. He played hurt. He basically almost got them to the Super Bowl. They far exceeded expectations with him under center.
And he does have 1 year with them going to the Super Bowl.
Yeah. So – and to know the whole time you're gone, like how professional was he? Do you know what I mean?
Much more than Baker.
Right? And now, because he was professional, because he performed the best he could, he played through his shoulder injuries. People think like he just got it in the last game. But no, he played a lot of the season with shoulder problems, just like Baker Mayfield did. And
then
now, like, because of that shoulder surgery, his market dried up. Like, there's no doubt in my mind that the Niners were planning to move him. Maybe if he was healthy, he ends up on the Colts instead of Matt Ryan. Maybe he maybe he ends up in Seattle. Maybe he ends up in Carolina, you know. But now, his only hope is if a team that wants a quarterback gets screwed out of a quarterback in the draft, whether it's the Steelers or the Panthers or the Seahawks.
For the audience, there's only two potential first rounders, if that.
Right, Malik Willis and Kenny Pickett. Yeah. So, and maybe there's one more but not a first rounder, I would think. But anyway,
is it a Georgopolis coming out?
No. But so, much like Baker Mayfield, they're going to have to wait either during the draft or right after the draft. Mayfield, I think, is going to get cut. If they can't move him, they got to release him.
I think so too.
Because he's too much of a cancer. Jimmy G, you could keep on the team if you had to, and I think John Lynch made a statement to that effect. Like he goes, "We're not giving him away, and we're not releasing him."
Right. And that's I don't blame him for that stance.
Yeah, because you've got to feel some loyalty to the guy, and I know that's a silly concept in the NFL, but.
Well, that seems to be part of their culture in San Francisco.
Yeah, they seem to be
good treatment of players.
Yeah, they seem to have that reputation. So, so maybe they do keep him. I'm sure if something comes up, they'll move him. But I don't think Garoppolo is going to be a cancer for that team. Look, he could be a better version of Ryan Fitzpatrick, right? Ryan Fitzpatrick, everywhere he went the last, 7-8 years of his career, he was somebody's backup, and he always ended up starting. But you never heard him bitch. You never heard him complain. He was always professional. Like, he supported every – he supported Josh Allen. He supported Tua Tagovailoa.
Right.
Well, anywhere he's been the perfect backup QB.
Well, he did manage to get the big contract out of New York as a starter, remember?
Yeah, and also the Commanders, the Reds, the football team.
He's also a nightmare for a topic we're going to talk about next.
Yeah, we'll talk about it some other time. But anyway, so – I think Jimmy G stays put at least until draft day. And he may be on their opening day roster. I don't think it's incredible. Mayfield's getting cut. If he doesn't get traded, he's getting cut. He's too much of a cancer to be on that team.
You know what? I kind of feel for Baker or Mayfield because of the fact that was a loser team for 20 years till he got there. I'm sorry. That's the bottom line. He took you to a damn playoff.
Oh, yeah. He doesn't deserve what he's been doing, but his own lack of professionalism, lack of maturity made it worse.
Right. Well, I think the problem is he pisses everybody off. You know,
are you trying to tell me the Houston Texans wouldn't have taken Mayfield as part of the compensation back for Watson?
No, it's not that. What I'm telling you is Mayfield would have said, I'm not going. And that would have screwed the whole trade up. So they just left him out. And Texans didn't really ask for him, according to the reports. But anyway, let's get back to Jimmy G then. You're saying that the team is going to stay put with him. And I view it this way. Training camp injury, he's gone. Meaning they'll ship him out to somebody. In-season injury, he's gone. They'll ship him out to somebody. And right before the trade deadline, they would be possibly willing to take a pay cut in terms of what they ask for him to send him to a team that may need a quarterback, you know, as long as it's not in their conference division, you know.
Yeah, I can see that.
But I do see I could see Houston saying, we're going to rebuild. Jimmy's only 30. He could be that leader, and then we'll be looking for that younger QB anyway, you know?
Look, the Falcons signed Mariota after
that. That was the other one. The Falcons is another one who could be looking for somebody like that. But if Mariota plays his cards right, you know, that's all that. All right. So I also think, though, they should not give him for nothing because people forget he's become a punching bag. But Jimmy Garoppolo, when he came from the Patriots, he looked awesome. And then the injury set in. And his problem is the fact he's never healthy.
Right.
So I don't fault the 49ers for saying we're done with you because you just – I mean, this year, he's a warrior. He's this. We all agree, but at the end of the day, he's what? Hurt again.
Right, exactly.
Okay, let's get into some sleazy NFL smut. With your – I don't think he's anybody's favorite guy. Jerry Jones.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, Jerry Jones appears – to have an illegitimate daughter.
Okay.
Yeah. She's alleging he's the legal father back in the 90s. I guess he had an affair. And the reason I bring this up is just a couple of weeks ago, one of their bigwigs retired, and it's pretty much 99.9% confirmed that he was a peeping Tom with girls in the locker room and all that. There were the cheerleaders and stuff like that. You know, it just seems to be one nightmare after another, and he always gets away with it, as I would expect, because they're billionaire owners. Okay, she's a congressional aide, Alexander Davis, she's suing Big Jerry, stating he's her legal father. He reached some kind of settlement with the mother when she was 1 year old.
Right.
You know, and was paying money, this or that. And then when asked, you know, Jerry will talk about anything. I'm sure he'll talk about Robert Kraft in that little happy ending. You know? But when it came to this, this is personal.
Yeah. I don't blame him.
This is personal. Yeah. Now, he is saying that she's suing him for money.
Yeah.
And his attorney came out and a quote here, I would challenge Jerry Jones to put up any evidence that anyone demanded any money, period. And he goes on to say other stuff, but he just straight out challenged. I think Jerry Jones is lying. I find this a seedy story that's going to go away in a day. But to me, it shows, and I'm not saying I'm right or wrong. It just seems to me as a Cowboy hater. Now, to the Cowboy fans, when the Cowboys suck, I don't like that either because I love to hate on them when they're good. So it's like the Yankees. Same thing with the Yankees.
Okay.
But it just seems that these two teams, well, the Cowboys, Jerry Jones gets away with murder over there. What are your big thoughts on this, John?
Honestly, I think this is it's one of these stories that I really couldn't care less about. Look, from what I understand, I don't think there's any doubt that he fathered this child, this woman, Alexandra Davis. He had an agreement with the mother. $375,000 settlement when the kid was born. almost $60,000 in other expenses. He's been paying some sort of monthly annual and special funding, which probably means a monthly check, a birthday gift, and maybe college or something. You know, I'm just, you know, that would fall under those categories, right?
So I guess, Big John, the real question then is, because I agree with you in a sense, this seems to have been, I guess the question I'm going to ask you, because I'm asking myself, is why is this a story? Why could this not have been solved privately? Is she looking for something, or did Jerry just screw up, or somebody found out?
The only thing I could think of, and again, I don't know either party, but the only thing I could think of is that she got past the age where he was supposed to support her. You know, like, look, when husband and wife get divorced and there's children involved, it's usually the husband. The support is only legally mandated through 21, I think.
18 or 21, yeah.
Yeah. So why would we expect the illegitimate father of a child, who, by the way, is doing right in the sense that he's been supporting his kid all along. So why are we – because it's Jerry Jones, we're just like, well, he must be a scumbag in the situation.
Exactly.
Like he's some backwards hillbilly, right? No. From what I could tell, and again, we don't have the whole story. From what I could tell, it seems as if it's the girl who just wants the gravy train to keep on rolling. You know, that's the way I interpret it.
I believe her lawyer that she has made no extortion demands, but I believe you in the sense she doesn't kind of want this to end. But I also believe, I mean, that's one possibility. So I agree with that possibility, sure. But I also believe it's possible some reporter got this and just blew this story up more than probably anybody wanted. I mean, I'm not saying that happened. That's a possibility.
Well, the only way
I think Jerry did the reason I believe those possibilities are there is because Jerry will talk about anything. He was like, no, this is private. Meaning he's pissed this is out and is going to keep it private. But
there was a non-disclosure agreement as part of the settlement. So,
But John, you know good and well, the past 2 years, non-disclosure agreements, the courts have literally thrown them out.
When there's been a compelling reason, but for what I'm trying to get at is
no, it's political now.
Fair enough, but what I'm saying is there'd be no reason for Jerry Jones to make it public.
Yeah. No, I agree. And you know what? The more I think about it is whoever put this topic in our podcast should be taken out bad. Let's just end it on this podcast in this note. Who would have ever thought in a seedy story we'd be kind of taking Jerry Jones' side?
Yeah, right? Well, look, it just goes to show you anything can happen.
All right, Big John. I've been doing a lot of the talking here, so I want you to take the handle here for the next story. Bruce Arians retires. If you can fill us in on what happened here in terms of the timeline and then what's starting to spill out into the rumorville.
Yeah, so Bruce Arians, head coach of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, he obviously won a Super Bowl with them 2 seasons ago, decided to retire. Now, if you're a casual fan, it might strike you as a sudden, well, what's up type of thing. But in actuality, a lot of the NFL insiders, if you follow them, have been saying for a while now, like Bruce Arians may step down at some point. Technically, he retired as head coach, but he's moving into the front office. So he's not leaving the team. He's just relinquishing the day-to-day control.
Right.
That's going to Todd Bowles, the defensive coordinator who has had head coaching experience. He was the head coach of the Jets.
Correct.
And he's a pretty well-respected defensive coordinator. I'd say one of the better ones.
Right. And to the audience, that's huge because he's not only a little bit older, but he also is able to get along with the current generation very well. So it's not just respect from management and his peers, but also from the players.
Right. Yeah.
He's one of the few you see.
Yeah, and I don't think anyone has a bad word to say about him either, from what I could tell. But so Arians announces his retirement, and he says, hey, I'm turning it over to Bowles. And Arians' reputation sort of precedes him in that he always tries to take care of his staff. Like, he's not one of these, like, you know, like, oh, as long as I got mine, I don't care what happens to everybody else. And, you know, no, he's well known for, like, wasn't he the first to hire a woman full-time to his staff? I think it was Arian.
Yeah. But at the end of the day, he's extremely loyal, but he's also old school, though.
Oh, yeah. He's known for yelling at people and cursing them out, but he views that as part of coaching, you know. He does turn over a lot of the reins to his assistants and his coordinators, but at the same time, he still maintains that overview. Like, correct. Yeah, you guys can run your day-to-day, but if I think something is wrong, I reserve the right to redline it right out of the game plan, you know.
Now, let me input that he took this job telling them, I'm not going to do any game planning. He was going to leave that to the coordinators. And actually, that's in the military structure and the civilian structure, that's actually how you do it. Well, if there's a project, you're in charge, somebody's actually going to do aspects of that, and that's what the coordinator does.
Well, micromanagers are typically frowned upon. You want managers that delegate authority, in the corporate world at least. So, but yeah, you're right.
Okay, what about this quote? General manager Jason Licht. Is that how you say it?
Yep.
Oh, good. Gosh, imagine going up with that name. Quote, there's always going to be some friction between people on the staff and players and a coach. It's just normal. General manager Jason Licht on friction between Brady and Arians. Now, normally I would go, oh, there's something there. But the truth is, you and I are older in terms of as fans and as being in the industry. So we've been around to know who Bruce Arians is because most don't. Because unless you're a head coach, they don't know who you are. But since we're in this industry, and he's always been abrasive. He's always had a style about him. It seems that he may, and I'm terribly guilty of this, burn bridges. Not because you hate one another. It's just like, dude, I can't take you anymore. You can't take us. Our time has just come to an end. That seems to have happened in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
You know, and he's finally moved on. And I think they're trying to use that as the impetus that Brady wanted out. But my issue with that is, hey, I'm sorry, but Belichick and Arians probably have more closeness together in their styles and how they look at it and how they treat the media and all than any other coach in the NFL.
Yeah, but look, I understand what you mean because, look, the person I compare Arians to, not in terms of where their strength was, is Bill Parcells. Parcells was a defensive coordinator. Arians is more of an offensive coordinator mind. But look at – like if you watch some old tapes of Bill Parcells screaming his lungs out at Phil Simms on the sideline. Oh, my God. Stupid. Why'd you do that? That is the dumbest thing I've ever seen. Do you get your head out of your ass? You know, like, I mean, you would hear that nonstop on the Giants. And by the way, that's when they were winning Super Bowls. It wasn't like, you know – the only guy he didn't yell at was LT for the most part.
Yeah. Okay?
Because he knew how to handle people.
Remember what he said to Bill Belichick? Well, that's why you're not a head coach anymore.
Right.
You better remember. I was like, dude, it's just the irony.
Yeah. So now, last year there were reports, you know, you saw them as well as I did, that there was friction between Brady and Arians because Brady preferred working with Byron Leftwich on the game planning. And Arians, allegedly, would walk in and redline stuff. Like, no, you can't do this during the game. No. Do everything can stay, but this isn't going out.
True or not? What do you think?
Probably. I would say it's true. I could see why it's true. I could also see that what some people claim, that Arians, truly old school, believes in the team. He doesn't believe in any one person above the team. So he got in Brady's face, too. And I'm sure what's the last time anybody got in Brady's face? You know what I mean?
I'm sure Belichick, but not like
not in the same Arians. Way, not in the same way.
But they had a different relationship.
Right. But it also – Arians also, in his way, was very accommodating to Brady. For example, he said, I did not want Antonio Brown on my team. I did not want him on my team. But why did they sign him? Because Brady wanted him. Mm-hmm. So he bent a little bit, but when Antonio Brown had his meltdown in the Meadowlands against the Jets, what was Arian's reaction. He's no longer part of this team. I'm not answering questions. Yeah. I don't talk about people not on this team. Like, what was that? In the post-game conference, he's gone. You know, I don't care why. He's gone, you know?
What did he say he was retiring for? Why was he retiring?
He just said it was time. And there were people who knew he was looking to retire. But here's a theory that's going around, which I, to be honest with you, with no other facts, just whether it sounds reasonable to me, I think it sounds reasonable. I think Arians would not retire to give Brady the satisfaction of saying he retired me, right? I think that wasn't going to happen. So when Brady retired, when he saw Arians wasn't going anywhere, they probably huddled together and maybe between management, Arians, Bowles, Brady, maybe they just had some talks and said, look, why don't we do this? Bruce, you're going to retire anyway. You told us you're tired of this. You know, there's. I think he still has health issues. And they said, look, why don't you retire on your terms? How would you like to retire? And he probably said something along the lines of, well, if Brady comes back and the team's a contender, I'd rather turn that type of team over to Bowles.
Oh, Todd Bowles. And that is why he said he retired. That was his goal.
And that makes sense to me.
Hall of Fame.
given his loyalty to his people, that makes sense to me. Like, why stick Bowles, potentially, with a crappy team, with no Tom Brady team, with no quarterback, and no good quarterbacks coming out in the draft? You know, like, so to me, it makes sense. Whether it actually played out that way, I don't know. But it works out for Todd Bowles. It works out for Brady because Brady gets to keep Leftwich. And Brady now can work because Todd Bowles, more than likely, is not going to redline anything Leftwich does. Look,
right. Leftwich was the big key there, I think. The key is Todd Bowles is a defensive coach.
Yes.
And Brady knows he's going to focus. He's going to be naturally inclined to focus on the defense, and it's Tom Brady. And Leftwich was a hot candidate for
very
a coaching
hot.
Gig
very
last cycle. So, whatever. I mean,
and by the way, Byron Leftwich.
Not stupid either. Todd Bowles won't go to the red line, but he'll sit him down. What are we doing? What are you guys talking about? You know?
Well,
which
it'll
is
be
a big
Bowles
difference
team.
To red line.
Yeah, it'll be Bowles' team. Like, he'll make that clear. He's got that personality. But at the same time, people also forget, Byron Leftwich himself was an NFL quarterback for a good 10, 12 years, I think.
He was a backup for like a half.
He was the first round draft pick.
Yeah, he was a bust.
so he didn't live up to expectations. I wouldn't have called him a complete bust.
No, you're right.
He's had experience. Like, in other words, it's not somebody like McVay who was an X and O's whiz kid or whiz and hut. It was like, the guy took his lumps. He was one of the toughest quarterbacks to play, as I remember.
Right. But, Big John, I agree with you. And when I say half and half, you're right. He was a big disappointment. But I wasn't shocked because he came out of Marshall. And then there's a space they need to grow. And most coaches don't give those smaller university QBs that don't compete at the high level. And I think that's kind of what happened to him. But that said, one reason I think Brady likes that combination of working with Leftwich is he's Tom Brady. He's probably Leftwich is going to probably agree more than not with him. And that's just a natural inclination for any player. But that said, Leftwich is still a hot candidate. But why give the job to Bowles and not Leftwich?
Because I think, well, look, if you buy into the premise that it was Brady behind this somehow, you know, like the desire to have Brady come back, you couldn't give Brady the keys to the castle, you know, entirely.
And you don't think that. You think this just happened?
No. I think if you buy into it, which I think is a possibility, if you're management, do you want to give him, do you want Brady to, in his mind, say, I got rid of the coach I didn't care for, and I made them put in the guy I'm in love with on this staff? No.
Yeah.
You get one or the other at tops because you're Tom Brady. You get one or the other. You got rid of Bruce Arians. We're putting in Todd Bowles. Why? Because Bruce Arians wants Todd Bowles. And that could have been part of the agreement, right? Like, I'll only retire.
Well, didn't Brady take a trip to Wembley? And all this meeting went down and him coming back?
I don't know. But, I mean, look.
But let me ask you then about the new head coach. Todd Bowles is a beneficiary the Latino struggling with that. You talked about why Bowles over Leftwich. Now, this also makes the NFL happy because it's a black head coach. But we've already talked about how look, Todd Bowles is a damn good defensive coordinator. I actually researched him after the New York Jets hoopla. With the political divide, a lot of black fans were saying he was let go because he was black. I said he was let go because of his record. But you could, having been in that industry, we knew about his reputation. He was beloved by others. His record speaks for itself as a defensive coordinator. My take was Bill Belichick. Browns, Jets, two perennial losers. Now he's getting his shot at seeing what can he do. And he had like three or four he had like a five-year coaching period with the Jets, and like three or four different starting quarterbacks, one of them being Fitzpatrick. So he's just streaky. So he never really has had a top-tier QB. So I don't know. I think he's now in a great situation. I think it was a good hire. But explain to us how we got to him.
I think it was a combination of things. I think Bruce Arians loved him, and I think for the Bucs, it is like a PR opportunity because you are promoting from within. Now, whether they had promoted Leftwich, who is also black, or Bowles, they come out ahead in that sort of race scorecard, right?
Technically they do with the Rooney Rule. They are complying, and in their minds, they hired
you mentioned Bill Belichick, which is the classic example of giving a coach a second chance. But
he was run out of Cleveland.
But there's been other guys who have had success on their second go around. Pete Carroll. No matter what you think of Pete Carroll, he was horrible with the Jets. Became an icon in Seattle. Dan Quinn went to the Falcons, did pretty well initially, and then kind of trailed off. Goes to Dallas, rebuilds his reputation as a defensive coordinator. Now he's a hot coaching candidate, head coaching candidate again. Listen, some people just need the experience of being the number one. Defensive coordinators are probably the best equipped. That's the best experience you could have in being a head coach, but it's not a replacement for being a head coach. So they probably need to go. Look, when you hire a defensive coordinator who's had no head coaching experience, if you're an owner, you should either give them a five-year run or understand that they're probably not going to be successful right out of the gate. It's very rare.
I agree. I think a five-year run with a checkup at year two and three, checkup at year two, three, you know, if it's going south too quickly, you know, but you want to give him 4 to 5. Give him 3 to 5 years.
Right, and what did they do with Bowles? They tore up his two-year contract as a defensive coordinator, and they gave him a new five-year contract. So it seems as if the Bucks are prepared to do this the right way, you know. And look, now Bowles has no excuses, right?
I want to ask you a question.
Yeah.
First of all, he was 24-40 as a head coach for the New York Jets. But as an interim coach, he's a winner, 2-1. So knowing he really didn't have a steady quarterback, and Darnold was his last quarterback, I think. Is he going to be a North Turner, who was a great coordinator but had failed at every coaching position? Is he going to be a North Turner or Bill Belichick?
Look, Bill Belichick is a higher standard, right? So I don't know if he's not going to be a 9-time Super Bowl winning coach, but can he be a winning coach in the NFL?
Pete Carroll.
Yeah. Can he be Pete Carroll? Sure. Yeah. Can he be successful? Yeah. Especially with the situation he inherited.
You know what? It's like you're serious. You're getting ready to explain it on 10 different points.
And I'm holding back. I'm holding back.
You're not holding. It's like there's one point. What's the one point? It's Tom Brady. He's going to be the next Pete Carroll. I mean, he's got Tom Brady. Tom Brady actually proved to the NFL. Agree with me or not, but take the point further. But Tom Brady when he went to Tampa Bay, my first thought was, oh, we're going to laugh because, you know, even if he has a winning record, we're looking at, you know, tradition holds, statistically speaking, when these veterans hit these new teams, it's not the gravy train. He not only did it, he went in with the Bucks, and that defense beat down and kept Kansas City from a defense. So don't you think with that team alone, it's sure it's not the same full team, but look, they were literally a comeback play away from advancing to the championship game or advancing past the Rams last year. So, I mean, am I on cloud nine thinking Bo's going to succeed or?
Oh, I think he'll succeed. I think he has the team to succeed. He has no excuses. He's got his veteran quarterback. He's got the winningest quarter, the greatest quarterback of all time. They're returning two great receivers. The third one's still a little bit batty.
Do you think Antonio Brown will come back?
Well, looking at what he just did on Instagram or whatever, no, I don't think he'll be back. I don't think he should be in the NFL. And by the way,
what's up with that libertarian belief there?
No. He's free to.
Oh, I'm messing with you. Yeah.
Listen, let's face it. If he wanted to show the NFL that he's serious, that he's getting over his mental issues or whatever, this isn't the way to do it. I don't care.
Let's inform the audience here.
Yeah.
We're talking about Antonio Brown versus Sidney Christine. And Big John, I'll let you take it from there. You're doing well.
So, look, basically the claim here is, I'll boil it down quickly because I don't want to waste too much time on this. Antonio Brown claims that he lent some money to this model/producer/Instagram hoe. But her name is Sidney Christine. He claims the amount of money was $5,000. And he says, I want my money back. Apparently she wasn't quick enough giving him his money back. So he started posting these threatening texts and messages on Instagram saying, if I don't get my money back, I'm going to expose you. And there was a picture of the two of them in bed together, assuming naked under the sheets, and like he was threatening to, quote, expose her. Now.
But Big John, what was it that he specifically said that it's like, why are you talking like that? Because nobody's going to side with you. What specifically did he say? There's two quotes, I think, if I remember.
Let's see, which quote? I'm not sure which ones you're referring
to. Oh, send my money, bitch.
Yeah, well, yeah, he demanded. I cleaned it up a bit, William. I said he demanded his money back.
Ho, stop playing with me, bitch. I'm going to show you this time. And so when I see – and people, I'm reading it as he types it.
Right.
Why, John?
Yeah, you're not helping your case at all. That's why I think there's – without trying to be flippant, I think he has mental health issues. And I think that's why a lot of people especially after his Tampa Bay meltdown – maybe it goes back to that hit he took from Vontaze Burfict a couple years ago where he was, like, literally almost killed on the field with a headshot, illegal shot to the head.
That was devastating.
He's never been the same guy since. Bruce Arians, who was the offensive coordinator in Pittsburgh at the time, when he was at Tampa Bay, I mentioned earlier, he did not want Antonio Brown on the team. He goes, as talented as he is, he's a head case. We don't want him. The only reason he got there is because Brady advocated for him. Brady advocated for him in New England as well. Belichick really didn't want him in New England, but he said, okay, Tom Brady needs him. He's got great talent. Maybe we could tame him. Then he failed with the Raiders too. Like, how many times are you going to put up with a guy who, while being a gifted athlete, has these personality/mental shortcomings? He is a ticking time bomb. Like, at that last game in the Jets, like, I've never seen a spectacle like that where a player disrobes in the middle of the game and runs across the field while the play is going on and walks out on his team. I've never seen that. I've seen guys retire at halftime.
Yeah, I can't remember. Who was it? Retire somebody, dude.
It was one of the Bills. I forget who it was. But there was somebody who retired at halftime, and it wasn't as embarrassing as what I saw out of Antonio Brown. So
this is a new low. He's had serious lows. I mean, his low, I mean, he keeps
cratering even more and more. So do I think he's going to be back in the NFL? Hell no. And any team that signs him at this point, unless they get a written doctor's note saying he's being treated for bipolar or something like that and he's on his medication or whatever, unless you see something like that, I wouldn't come near him. I wouldn't touch him with a 10-foot pole. He's too much of a liability.
You know, all I'll say on the subject is he's – I agree with you, John, sadly, because when he first came into the league, everybody loved him because he was the great underdog story. And then – and then they just change. And maybe there's somebody there. Maybe there's nobody there that says no.
And it's tough for me to say that. You're right. And it's tough to me. I don't think it's that anybody says no. I think he's just in need of serious help. I don't think it's something that's like, oh, man, he's just being an ass. No, I think he has serious issues. Maybe it's a chemical imbalance. I'm not saying he does drugs. I'm saying maybe he's bipolar or something.
He's so out there, there could be something wrong with that.
Yeah, he could be bipolar for all I know, you know. And
well, you know what? Let's just hope for the best. And I agree with you, but I would not be shocked if he does sign with somebody. Even though it is wide receiver rich, Green Bay is looking. All righty. Let's talk a little Dickie Vitale. Dickie Vitale, quote, cancer just got their ass kicked. So, Dick Vitale is 82 years old, and we're so fragmented, Big John, so not as many people know Dick Vitale the last 20 years that they did, you know, his first 40, you know? That's how long he's been around. But his voice was so distinct, and with his cancer, he couldn't talk for a while, you know? So it's, I mean, he's 82, he's got cancer. At the end, you know, death with the Sith takes us all, right? But he's conquered it this go-around. And we just wanted to kind of wish him happy recoveries and for many more years. And what people don't realize, we were just talking about it off-camera, I think, about the announcers getting paid so much. But there are a few memorable announcers. You know, Howard Cosell. You know, so and in basketball, Dick Vitale is one of the more memorable
college basketball
because of his unique voice. Any quick thoughts here, Big John?
Yeah, no, I mean, look, he is older, probably was going to retire soon anyway, but especially for someone like him, someone who relied on his voice like that to have, I think it was some sort of throat cancer, where he couldn't talk and he had to be quiet. Look. Wonderful to hear he's beaten it, as far as we know, that he's back, he's talking, he's sharing his story, trying to inspire others, kind of put you in mind of Jimmy Valvano all those years ago, the Jimmy V Foundation, and how tragic that was. I mean, eventually he succumbed.
You know, I had his autograph.
Yeah, I mean, people, if you don't remember Jimmy V, you know, I mean, especially with
very charismatic. That's right. Yeah, 1984, maybe? I can't quite remember, but
it was the Villanova
underdog
team. It was the Villanova team that beat Georgetown in the NCAA championship. And it was that famous last shot.
No, he was North Carolina State.
You're right.
Jim Valvano.
Jim Valvano, yeah. Where they missed the hoop and then caught it and dunked it. Yeah. And that was against, I think, Georgetown, who was
– Houston. It was Houston. Only because I'm from North Carolina.
Okay.
So as you're talking, you're triggering memories.
All right. Yeah. Like, I'm not a big college –
He was tight with them, and Jimmy V had cancer also. Yeah.
And I'm not a big college hoops fan, so forgive me if I got the facts wrong. But the point was he was an underdog winner. Captured the attention of the country and then unfortunately got stricken with cancer. So glad to hear Dick Vitale's on the mend and hopefully he'll continue for a long while.
You know, at 82, I'm just happy that he overcame this and, man, just enjoy your life. Go do nothing. And if watching, I mean, just, it's like, I'd rather enjoy it with my wife the final few years in that sense, but to each their own.
Right.
Okay. We said there were two Bruces who retired. Bruce Arians was one, and one of the world's favorite actors. But I must say, I think Nicolas Cage would win the bet the actor with the most straight-to-video movies done in the last 10 years. Bruce Willis has been diagnosed with aphasia. Big John, if you want to tell us a little bit about aphasia, but he's going to take a sabbatical, supposedly, but in reality, he's retiring and he's gone.
Yeah, so aphasia is one of those disorders that affects speech and communication. Now, its cousin is something called apraxia. So forgive me, sometimes I get the two confused. Aphasia is a disorder which not only affects your ability to communicate, but your ability to understand what people are telling you as well. I think it's due to tissue damage in the brain. The numbers are about 2 million Americans have this condition, aphasia. It's more common than Parkinson's or cerebral palsy. So
what's the main cause of that, though?
Of aphasia?
Yeah.
I think it's brain.
Wasn't it strokes we read?
Well, it's brain tissue damage. It could be strokes. It could be concussions. It could be anything that affects your gray matter, basically.
But the point is, does something to the communicative skills, right?
Yeah. They have trouble.
What's the problem?
Yeah, they have trouble either being expressive or being receptive. You know, it's both. Both ways can be affected.
Is there a cure?
I don't think there's no cure, but like I'm pretty sure there's medication to lessen the risk of stroke. I'm sure there's a speech therapy you can do and things like that. Like I know some people.
In other words, take care of yourself.
But it's not a death sentence, is what I'm trying to say.
Well, I think part of the reason for that is simple, and that's because you can have some kind of speech therapy, but you can't wait too long. It's one of those.
Oh, yeah.
I used to work at the Alzheimer's Association, so my first thought process was some kind of form of dementia. And it's not per se. It can become that, but that's not the cause of it.
Right.
But it just seems that as a society, no matter how much you want to stay young, fit, whatever, how much we work out or whatnot, you know, our bodies are slowly coming apart and deteriorating, and it's sad.
Tell me about it.
You know what's sad is a couple years ago, maybe anywhere from 2 to 4 years ago, we got to the point where it's Bruce Willis. Hey, about 4 years ago, we're like, it's Bruce Willis probably earning a couple $1 million to have 5 terrible scenes. And now I'm like, oh, my God, I'm a bad person.
Yeah.
But he was a straight-to-DVD guy. His last he earned he got like $2 million per pop, and he did like 22 movies in the last 4 years. Now, I don't know if he got $2 million every time.
Right.
That's what, $40 million?
Look, he's still, at one point, he was the most popular actor, male actor in the world.
Yeah.
Like, he's been in a ton of movies, right? So, I mean, he was even in that Sylvester Stallone movie where he gathered everybody
Expendables.
Over the Expendables.
Every has-been action hero from the 80s.
Exactly. So he's been in a lot of stuff. And look, he was a good comedic actor at one point. People forget when he started on TV in Moonlighting with Cybill Shepherd. It was supposed to be a detective drama, but that was one of the hot couples. If you were old enough to watch TV in those years, that was Maddie, and I forget what his character's name was. But it was
Bruce with hair.
Bruce with hair too, not a few hair.
Yeah, I look at him and I go, oh man, that poor guy's done.
But he could do comedy. Yeah, he could do comedy too. You know, it wasn't just action. Yeah. He could do comedy.
You think he should try to come back or just enjoy life?
Look, the temptation is to say he should just look after his health. He probably doesn't need the money. I say probably because I don't know what his financial situation is.
Look, dude, let's say it was $2 million a pop, 22 movies, that's $44 million. He was probably used to getting much more than that at his heyday with all the – what I'm saying is he may have begun to learn to live a lifestyle that
that's hard to maintain. I agree.
Yeah.
So, like – but that's the temptation. The other thing is that some people, especially actors – they're not driven solely by money. They're driven by a need to to work. Project and to be seen and to have attention paid to them. I don't think I'm speaking out of turn. That's the actor personality. So we'll see what happens. I mean, I hope he can at least mitigate the symptoms of what he has of aphasia, and hopefully he'll be able to live a productive life in comfort instead of being worried about pain or debilitation or anything like that.
No, I agree. I mean, it just in researching this, coming across, it's like back in 2020, the actors and the crew knew it's you know, there's a quote here. Somebody said that he said, "This is Bruce Willis. I know why you're here, and I know why you're here. But why am I here?" Yeah, I mean, so he was starting to use an earpiece. He looked confused. There was a movie, a couple movies ago, that we did watch. My B-movie, Meltdown for a Night, so I watched one of it. And you could just see in the actual role, he was like a feeble old man doing the same scene. And I say feeble because he had this confused look. So it transcended not just from they couldn't hide it anymore.
Right.
And this one director worked with him with one movie, and then when he asked about it, he said, "Oh God, this guy's lost," you know. And so they said, "No, he's better." So he did the second one. He goes, "Well, he's worse," you know. So they offered him two more, and he turned it down. Hmm. And to me, when I read that, I was like, "Wow!" It's like, this is Bruce Willis. He still can make that DVD straight to DVD right. or video millions.
Right.
And so I think when that opportunity is no longer there, even from the up and coming directors, I think it's time for him I'm not going to say what it's time for him to do, but it's time for him to make some serious decisions.
Sure.
Maybe spending the rest of his days with his family and focusing on the therapy. Because maybe he's been doing therapy and maybe he can't come back. But, Big John, I think we should close it out with what. Tell me your favorite movie. I mean, his filmography is so vast.
Right.
It's not just one. Tell me your favorite movie.
Oh, the first Die Hard movie is probably the one that comes to mind first. I liked him in Sin City, and I also just loved Sin City, the movie. But I would say the first Die Hard, all the Die Hards were good. Even Die Hard 4, where he's chasing Justin Long around Russia, I think. Even that one I'll watch. But his character in Die Hard, the first two especially, the one where Nakatomi building and then the airport in Philly, that was, you know, one and two were great. And like I said, Sin City are probably the ones. And Moonlighting, the TV show, because it was a groundbreaking TV show at the time. So,
well, you hit three of mine. The first Die Hard. I mean, is it a Christmas movie or not?
Yes.
Yes, Big John, Christmas movie. Me, it's an action movie set in Christmas. I don't care.
Yeah.
You win, I don't care.
I don't care either.
But Sixth Sense. You know, I saw the movie. It was one of those few times I don't want to talk outside world. And towards the middle end, I figured it out. Because I'm like, only because he never spoke to the person. I mean, it just seemed too... It was like, that's not how they would have done it, you know?
Right.
But and obviously Sin City 2. I like him in both of them. The first one's a classic. The second one's like, not him, but the movie in general. But my most favorite movie with him is 16 Blocks, where he plays the drunk cop that should have retired 5 years ago, trying to protect that rapper. You know, he's got that Rosie Perez that I'm going to shoot you just that I can't get your voice, you know? And to me, because once that movie gets moving, it takes about 20 minutes to set up. And then from that point to the end, it's action or intense suspense. And that one is, that's kind of like Roadhouse. If I'm surfing.
Yes, I was going to say,
that's
the perfect cable movie that you always stop on is 16 Blocks. It was underrated. I don't know that it was his best work, but it was a good, solid movie. And I enjoyed watching it when I saw it. Yeah.
Well, he looked his age. He looked like... I mean, that's what I found fascinating to me. And I talked the nuance of life. And those are the little nuances. You saw how much it's like, to me, it's a combination of makeup and how willing the actor is to get into that role he's playing. And he played that older guy, that older drunk I mean, he's like, when you saw him, you saw a fucking drunk cop.
Right. No, he made you believe. Yeah, that's the hallmark of any great actor, right? It's
it is.
The suspension of disbelief.
Big John has done acting before. But John, I tell you what, send us away with, what's the name of your latest project?
Oh,
it's not suited for children under 18.
It's not suited for work. Well, I'll say this. Without describing it too much, go to backtothestoneage.com. And it's a project I put together for Amazon Video. But it ended up being banned for being too controversial, William.
Well, let me put it this way. I think Tim Tooltime would probably love it. And I think my mom... you'd be like, is she around? No, she's around. She's not. You're cool.
I don't think too many females would appreciate that show. But we're hoping it'll hit big. We're gonna roll out the episodes in stages. So tune in here, and we'll let you know exactly when it launches. But backtothestoneage.com.
Thank you, Big John, and to everybody. We hope you enjoyed the show. As always, let us know what you would like to hear. Feedback. You know, and we'll grow as a show together. So, you've been listening to Points on the Board. Thank you. We hope to see you next time. And don't forget, visit sportsgrumblings.com and check out our stories, articles, and previous podcasts. To Big John in America, good night.
Bye-bye.